The numbers told the story, they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Hour number two of a numbers game at Visa, the sports betting network, VSiN.com, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV, however you're taking us in this morning. We sure do appreciate it. It's Gil Alexander. It's Kelly Bidlin live from Bar Canada at the D. Or for those listening in Spanish countries, Barcanada, the barrage here at the D.
It's a little bit more quiet in here.
Thursday. Oh, my God. Are you kidding me?
I still think the Thursday thing was funny. Like, it was so jammed in here on Thursday and Friday. It was like half the crowd. Maybe a little bit more than that, but it was
Thursday.
I mean, we almost needed a police escort to get out of here on Thursday. It was like there were people ready to sit on our laps. There were so many people.
Kelly
here.
And I did it. So let's keep our headphones on. Let's talk about how we're getting out of here. But then people did so poorly on Thursday that it was less of a crowd on Friday. That was my theory.
It was shocking. I feel like that's such a Vegas thing, too. I know everybody gets excited for day one of the tournament, but like day one out here, it's like, let's go. And then, oh, we lost all our bets. I'm going to sleep in tomorrow.
Michael Lamborn, producer number one and I, the original producer.
Wow. I've never even heard the name.
Michael Lamborn. I remember a Wednesday of March Madness in 2017. We remember people just going nuts, just losing their minds. We're like, it's Wednesday. Relax. Pace yourself. We get tweets at Beating the Book. Charles in Connecticut. Contrarian voice on the round of 32 schedule. I'm old enough to remember how it used to be, but I like this more. We get 12 plus hours each day, not 8. We get to see large parts of all games instead of just a few minutes. Seeing more is better for live betting, too. Contrarian viewpoint. Chuckism 1, my favorite part of ANG is Gil trying to pronounce these foreign tennis names. I do quite a good job at pronouncing the foreign tennis names. What did I botch? Kalinskaya Sakari.
I don't know. Yeah, I mean, you and Jake did have differing Kalinskaya pronunciations, but I don't know which one's right.
It's Kalinskaya. What did he say?
Also, like, I think I just butchered it even more, so.
What did he say it was?
I think it was a Kalinskaya or something like that. I think there was a long A somewhere.
Listen, Chuck, what's your name here? Chuckism 1. I disagree with you entirely. My pronunciation is impeccable. But a Kelly Bidlin segment of pronouncing these is coming up.
Yeah, but I mean, the names that Jake dropped on the men's side today.
Breaking news, though. Apparently, Kalinskaya has pulled out. Z-Free. Zachary matches fell off the board. Paul Krause. Hey, Gil, late update. Zachary awarded the win on a walkover against Kalinskaya. Just happened. John Massey. Favorite tennis phenomenon, the walkover. So, again, we need the player who withdraws to lay down on the ground and the person who advances to physically walk over that player.
Yeah, the Allen Iverson step over.
All right, guess what? We only have two picks today.
That's what's the timing? That was one of the matches that was supposed to start.
That was supposed to start right now. Yeah.
So like she left her hotel in beautiful downtown Miami and drove all the way up to Hard Rock Stadium.
She's like,
and then decided,
I'm tired of these plastic chairs, no towels and no cold water. I'm out of here.
I feel like that would have been like 4 hours ago. Like, I'm hungover. I was out partying Miami last night. I'm not playing.
John Baldusci, walkover. Jack and a Prius 2.0. As a guy from Boston who also watches every Bruins game and goes to a dozen games a year, do not put any money on a Bruins future. They are not built to win in the playoffs. They might win one round if they get Toronto, but that's it. Shot at Toronto before he got out of here. All right. And then everybody is just, we're chiming in on these commercials. Hoops by Hoots. I'll just read this one. I'm so excited for this upcoming commercial segment. I'm hearing Sick Burn Caitlin in my sleep. That didn't even make the candidates, that one. Sick Burn Caitlin. By the way, before we get to the commercials, best NCAA tradition that I'm so glad continued. Jim Nance, his last NCAA tournament was last year. We saw him in the Houston crowd there. He's a Houston Cougars alum rooting on his Cougars last night. So Ian Eagle, the great Ian Eagle, or so when he was on a numbers game, he told the story how the person at the airport called him Ian Iagle. One of the great stories ever. Ian Eagle now is, of course, on the main broadcast team with Grant Hill and Bill Raftery. Can we play? This is the beginning of a game yesterday, the Duke game. This is the opening exchange. They kept this tradition alive. Listen to the first sounds that come out of Bill Raftery's mouth after Ian Eagle's intro.
We talked about the last 24 hours leading up to this one. We are underway at Barclays Center. Duke controls the tip.
Ian Eagle. It's great. Duke right now. That's what goes on the little.
I don't know know if you heard that, but Kelly, I'm going to repeat what Raftery does right after. So Nance and him used to have this tradition. As soon as the ball is tipped, Raftery's excitement comes out in these grunts. So that, well, let me just repeat what he said. He goes, Bravo right now. Madison goes on the loop. Bravo.
Man, I can't believe you got that much out of it.
Okay, that's the best tradition. I'm glad they're going with it. You know what? You know what tradition I do not want to start?
I was like, Gil's clearly setting me this only because you can't understand a word that Raftery's saying.
He's so excited. He just bursts.
I mean, I heard Duke. I heard Duke. That's all I heard.
I don't think I heard Duke. The tradition that I do not want started that appears to be trying, that someone is appearing to try to start is, and I am Lefko. Candace Parker. He goes through everybody, right? He's like, who's on the set with him? He goes, who's on with it
with Lefko?
Yeah, Candace Parker. He introduces Jay Wright, Candace Parker, Jay Wright, and I am Lefko. All right, this is not was Follow the Money's producer back in the day. I am Reynolds. Let's not do that with the I am Lefko.
Oh, I didn't know he was doing that.
Adam Lefko, you do a good job.
Does he introduce the show every time that way?
And I am Lefko. You do a good enough job. You don't have to.
Yeah. All right.
Most amusing announcer remarks, and there were tons of them. Lisa Byington referring to Steve Smith as Smitty every time was great. I love you, Smitty. That's what she said. Dan Bonner continuously saying during the Colorado Marquette game, for Colorado to win this game, they've got to keep scoring.
Oh, I caught that one. I did catch that.
He said multiple times.
Most of these games I've got on mute. I'm impressed you're listening every single one. I did catch that one, though. I was like, I think that was me running out of my house yesterday for the Live Bet Sunday show. I rolled my eyes so hard when I heard that. It's like, they should. They should probably try to keep scoring.
Clark Kellogg thinks that to beat UConn, a team has to play, quote, at a high level, unquote.
Agreed.
Yeah.
It's a sharp take right there.
All right, most annoying commercials.
There was another one last night. I love when they do this, like the front end of the one and one. Like, you got to make this one. This is the important one here. we know how one and one works.
I would let it slide with Dan Bonner if he said it once, but he said it probably three times. He's like, they really, for Colorado to win this game, they've got to keep scoring.
What's funny is, like, I really think it's, you remember we had Ben on a couple weeks ago, and we were talking about the, like, he thought it was going to be an overturned call in the moment when he was making the call on the air, and that blew my mind that Ben is able to do that, that he's able to make the call in the moment, but think that it's going to get overturned, whatever just happened, right?
Oh, right.
But like, I think these guys just honestly get so excited that it just comes out of their mouth without, like, them really thinking about it.
By the way, like, I probably would suck, too. I just want to point
that out. That's what I'm saying. Like, I would get excited and yell out the most obvious thing ever.
And I mentioned earlier also the Grand Canyon girl screaming and TNT gratuitously going to the Grand Canyon crowd in Phoenix every single time they scored. I get it. You didn't want Alabama to win. I thought that was the most ridiculous, skewed broadcast of any game ever. All right, most annoying commercials. Here are your candidates. I should put this to a Twitter poll later.
Let's go. I love this.
All right.
Should have got 10 more minutes.
There's so many of these. Bad. Because people like to talk about Super Bowl commercials, but that is nothing compared to the first 4 days of March Madness.
So what's with that?
They show these commercials a million times.
But also, like, when did it become a thing where there's, like, new ones out of nowhere?
Here are your candidates. iPhone commercial with T-Pain. With the voice box. Don't let me go.
Okay.
Don't let me go.
We're going most annoying here?
Most annoying.
Okay. That's one.
Buffalo Wild Wings with a former SNL castmate Beck Bennett. Oh, come on. You got to box out.
Okay.
That's the problem with kids these days. No fundamentals. It's not that hard. You just got to box out. Box out. Box out. Oh, look at this guy. He can't get past me. Box out. What's wrong? What? What's wrong with your faces?
Did you find the script somewhere?
Let's go to sports bar.
Did you just write this down after seeing it 14 times?
I transcribed it.
Okay, yeah.
Because I heard it 100 times.
That commercial was funny to me the first four times I saw it. Yeah, I hear you. It's getting annoying.
The AT&T Draymond Green commercial. Choices are amazing, aren't they? 1 minute you're making all the right ones and everyone loves you. Then you make a bad one. Then a good one. A regrettable choice. Then another questionable choice. Soon you're left with just one choice. And that's to grow.
I don't even know how Draymond gets these commercials. What is he? He's got like two running right now, three running.
That's a great point. Like, who thought to themselves, you know who we should get to hawk this problem? The always lovely Draymond.
Right, Green. Yes.
Okay. And AT&T takes the day with this one. Here's another one from AT&T. Chet Holmgren and Shea Gilgeous-Alexander. Chet, they know what a pro wants. Shea, what a pro needs. Whatever makes you happy, sets you free. And I'm thanking you for knowing exactly.
All right, let's keep.
Oh, my God.
Let's keep it civil with the SGA and Chet comments, okay? But,
When Chet starts throwing his arm
it's
out.
Really bad.
To
really
a Christina bad. Aguilera jam.
Okay, so these are. I'm gonna follow up on that. This is what I get annoyed about with commercials, okay? A lot. It's plot holes, right? It's you're making a 30-second product, and it doesn't make sense, right? You know what my question is on the Chet and SGA one?
What's that?
How those guys know those song lyrics? How old is that song? You're telling me they heard that song enough growing up to know that by heart? I'm supposed to believe that?
That was Christina Aguilera's second big hit. It was the follow-up to her.
So what are
original.
We talking? 1999, 2000?
Oh, it's a long time ago.
Like I do not believe SGA and Chet know that song well enough. Like and they shouldn't. One you didn't mention, I tweeted about this one last night.
Please.
The Jason Sudeikis Taco Bell commercials, where he like randomly surprises college students about like their tweets about Taco Bell only being for like late night and you should have it during the day. And these kids are not shocked at all that a really famous actor just showed up on their campus.
You really want to do a commercial podcast, don't you?
Oh, yeah, I do. I find this stuff so fascinating.
All right. Baseball with Adam Burke on the other side. We'll actually also ask him what he thinks his favorite or most intriguing Sweet 16 matchup is. But baseball, as the baseball season begins this week, a special numbers game investigation reveals, plus Mike Somich on the Sweet 16 coming up as well. It's a numbers game at Visa, the Sports Betting Network.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
With so many bottles to choose from, it's easy to find your favorite, all at the lowest prices for over 30 years. Find what you love and love what you find at Total Wine & More. Drink responsibly. B21. It's Gil Alexander. It's Kelly Bidlin, live from Bar Canada here at the D. Mike Rouse on Twitter. We get tweets. Mike Rouse, Dan Bonner during the Colorado Marquette game. Colorado needs to come out and score in order to keep up.
Yeah, that was what I heard too. Yeah,
no, that, I mentioned that one. Okay. Yeah. Let's see here. Jack and a Prius 2.0. The Buffalo Wild Wings box out commercial is fantastic, especially at the end with the two people writhing in pain on the floor. Wolf named Wayne. If I have to watch Chet Holmgren sing that song one more time, I may lose my mind. That's all anybody wants to talk about, these commercials. Teasers and parlays. SGA, Chet Holmgren, AT&T commercials should be installed as the favorite for worst commercial. Got tired of that one quickly. A. Brown. Most annoying commercial begins and ends with SGA Holmgren. If I had an MVP vote, I would leave SGA off my ballot altogether just for making me wake up on a Monday morning singing, "What a pro wants, what a pro needs." I think, Kelly, that's the leader in the clubhouse for sure.
Yeah, I'm doing research right now.
Oh, I'm sorry. I apologize. Let me just scroll through these because these are all all Soccery and Colin Sky, and then they're all commercials. This one is from, let's see. Oh, Gamblu on hockey. That OT hockey take, while respected, is flawed, at least from this man's perspective. I had the same reaction, Lou. I thought it would be the opposite with the Bruins' take on that. Trust the glove. All commercials with happy, dancing, heavyset people smiling about their weight problem. Seems like a blanket one. Let's see here. Jason H11. Raft is saying, Ian Eagle, Grant Hill, Duke starts man-to-man. He always says that except when it's Boeheim, Cuse. He then says 2-3 zone with man-to-man principles still in that voice. LOL. Is that true? Is that what he says? Come on. You're making that up. Can't be. Let's see. There's so many of these. We'll get to these. Oh, Jack. Oh, no, we've read enough of Jack's. Jack, I really appreciate it. I'll read on one of yours a little later on because we've already gotten to you once or twice here this morning. Love the tweets. Always appreciate it. Best listeners in the game. This gentleman is the glue that holds the whole operation together. He's our senior writer, writes on all kinds of sports. And right now, not only has Sweet 16 stuff, but he has so much baseball. And the baseball regular season begins in 3 days, y'all. It's Adam Burke at Skating Tripods on Twitter, courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. How you doing, Adam?
Good. It's busy. Been very, very busy. I got two season previews left to write, the Pirates and the Cardinals. So those will come out later today over at VSiN.com.
Wow. All right. Let's let's start with baseball because there's so much of this. And I do think, you know, we were talking a little off air. I do think it feels a little under sort of discussed with March Madness pushed back a week this year. Let's get into, before we get to your season win totals, let's get to your best World Series price that exists right now. That would be who?
Well, this is going to sound like a homer pick because I am a Cleveland Guardians fan, but I mean, this is a team that has a really, really high ceiling. You know, they have an extremely high floor because they're going to be an exceptional defensive team. They've got great starting pitching. If the offense can get somewhere in the realm of league average, which is what they're kind of pushing for, and I think by season's end, they might be pretty close when Kyle Manzardo comes up, and then also they'll get Chase DeLauder up at some point too. This is a team that should get better throughout the course of the season, and I think the most important development for them, well, there are two of them. The first is Shane Bieber looks back. Shane Bieber went to driveline baseball over the offseason. The velocity's back. The curveball is back, which is the most important pitch, in my opinion, in his repertoire. So Shane Bieber looks pretty good. But the second thing is the Twins are already banged up again. Yoan Duran's going to miss maybe a couple of months with an oblique injury. Caleb Thielbar is out. Justin Topa, who was really good for the Mariners last year, he's out as well. So they're missing three key relievers out of that bullpen already. Not to mention Byron Buxton's back already hurts. So, you know, for me, I think the Twins were down a little bit from last season anyway with some of their losses in the starting rotation. But now I think they're down in that bullpen, and we know it's, you know, just an inevitability that Buxton's going to get hurt at some point. Carlos Correa's playing consistently hurt. I think the division is wide open for Cleveland at plus 350. And I think, you know, them getting a home series in the playoffs with what could be a much improved team by the time we get to October, I think they could be really, really dangerous. They've come down from 70-1 to 60-1 at DraftKings, but I think there's still some better prices out there you can look for.
All right. Fewest wins is a fun market. Fewest wins for the Major League Baseball season. I like your play here. Who you got?
Yeah, I like the Colorado Rockies for the fewest wins here. I mean, this could be the worst starting rotation that we've seen in at least the last 30 years. I mean, this group is really, really bad. You have a bunch of pitch to contact guys at Coors Field, which is never a good thing. So, you know, not only because of the altitude, but also because it's a very spacious outfield. For some reason, it just feels very wide. It's very deep in the power alleys. You know, there's a reason why, and it's not just the elevation and the atmospheric conditions, that that ballpark is the highest in batting average by a large margin every single season. And this is a decent Rockies team defensively, but they have nobody that generates strikeouts in this rotation. They're going to have guys on base all the time. The bullpen's not particularly good. The offense isn't very good either. I think that the A's will be better. I actually like the A's over their season win total. So I think it just kind of makes sense that there's a little bit of correlation to me that the Rockies would then be the team with the worst record in baseball.
Yeah, I mean, you said it. I mean, the biggest skill set that a pitcher can have at Coors, a pitcher on the Rockies specifically can have because they play there all year, is the ability to erase batters, erase them via the strikeout. The fact that they have these pitch-to-contact pitchers in a prairie, as you said, the widest dimensions of any ballpark in baseball, it is just malpractice that this front office has their team stocked like that. All right, you mentioned...
I will say this. So the league average strikeout percentage for starting pitchers last year was 22.1%. Kyle Freeland last season, 13.9%. Cal Quantrill, 13.1%. And that was in Cleveland,
God.
You know, they're really, really smart. Austin Gomber, 14.4%. Ryan Feltner was 18.9, but he only threw 43 innings. And then Dakota Hudson, 12.7%. So, like, we're not talking about guys that are a little bit below the league average. They are dramatically below the league average in a park where you cannot pitch to contact.
For those who are not, like, life fan graphers, 13 and 14%, those are anemic percentages of strikeouts. Like, that's incredible. All right, season wins. Let's start. You have a couple overs. You mentioned the A's. We can start there, and then you can go to your next one. What do you like?
Yeah, so I just think the A's, I mean, you know, they came into last year not really knowing exactly what was going to happen. You know, it had definitely been rumored that they would be moving to Vegas, but, you know, it was something that kind of hung around with them all season long. And that's not to say that it won't kind of be, you know, maybe a little bit of a distraction this year, but at least they know now. At least they know what their future is going to hold in that they will go to Vegas at some point and they will, you know, sublet somebody else's ballpark for a little while, whether it's Sacramento, Salt Lake City, whatever the case may be. But I do think this team is better this season. You know, Zach Geloff will be up for the full year. He looks like a really, really good player. They bring in JD Davis, who's at least an average major leaguer who you know, leaves your Giants after a bit of an ugly contract dispute.
Yeah.
I think Ryan Noda's a good player. I think Brent Rooker is a good player as well. But, you know, this rotation is just better with Alex Wood and Ross Stripling, two guys that are proven commodities. I wish Luis Medina hadn't gotten hurt, sprained his MCL. He'll probably be out until May or June. But that's a guy that was much better in the second half of last season. A's starters got better in terms of preventing home runs in the second half of last year. So they made some strides that I think kind of went unnoticed. I don't think that they'll be a very good team, but I do think their bullpen is better. Mason Miller is going to be ridiculous in the closer role as long as he stays healthy. So I think the A's are a team. They will be bad. Don't get me wrong, but it's really hard to lose 105 plus games, which is what their season win total line of 56.5 implies. I think that they'll be a little bit better than that. I think they may even avoid 100 losses this season.
And the other over is the Rays.
Yeah, so, you know, I'm an idiot, and I went against the Rays last year, and of course they started, with 14, 15 straight wins, whatever it was. I know that this season there are concerns. Taj Bradley is dealing with a pectoral. He's been slowed in spring training. They're missing a couple of guys in the lineup here, Jonathan Aranda, Josh Lowe. But as the season goes along, I think this is a team that will improve. They'll get Jeffrey Springs back at some point. Maybe they get Drew Rasmussen back late in the year, but they're just super smart. They find ways. They always find ways to develop pitching. Zach Eflin had a career year last year. I think Aaron Civale could be in line for one as well. But Gil, this was a top 10 offense last year. I mean, they were a borderline top 5 offense. And when you consider how bad of an offensive environment Tropicana Field is, their numbers were really, really good overall and actually pretty good at home. So I think this is a top 10, top 5 caliber offense. And to be at 84.5, when I could make a very strong case, they're the second best team in the AL East behind the Orioles. I just think that number is low. So I think the Rays definitely rebound this season.
All right, you got 30 seconds here, Adam. Give me your favorite under season wins.
Yeah, my favorite under, unfortunately, is Seattle. You know, I really like this Seattle team last year, played over 87.5. They played much better throughout the course of the season than they did at the outset. But this is a team that has major health concerns in the lineup. And I'm always worried about teams with young pitchers that wind up with really big innings increases, particularly in the high stress environment of Major League Baseball. So guys like, you know, Brian Wu, guys like, you know, Bryce Miller, George Kirby, Logan Gilbert, stuff like that. These guys are still kind of building up as professionals, and they've thrown a lot of innings over the last couple of seasons. So I think the Mariners are an under team this year.
All of Adam's baseball stuff and beyond. He's the managing editor here at VSiN at VSiN.com. Adam, you got me excited for baseball, man. I appreciate it. Thanks for the time.
Have a good one, guys.
Adam Burke. When I say the glue that holds this operation together, I'm not just, this is not a flippant remark. No. It really is. Really is. Mike Somich on the other side, college basketball. Somo bombing next for the Sweet 16.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Start betting smarter with a VSiN Pro subscription. Sign up on a VSiN Pro annual subscription today. Get your first year for only $199 instead of the typical price of $240. Just use promo code ANG. Get VSiN Pro access to everything we do for an entire year. That includes our daily best bets with a leaderboard to see which VSiN expert has the hot hand. Betting splits to show you where the money and bets are moving for every game. Betting systems, premium analysis, and 24/7 video access. Plus access to our March Madness betting hub with picks for every game of the tournament. Remember to use promo code ANG, though.
ANG as in a numbers game.
Get your first year of VSiN Pro access for only $199. Sign up today at VSiN.com/subscribe. We are overrun with commercials tweets, so I'm not going to read them. Just overrun. Jeff Levine wanted to talk about Adam Burke's baseball story. He says, baseball, yes. Question, how relative is the Orioles' 23-6 spring record following their 101-win season? Is the talent that good if they avoid injuries? Jeff, typically, I will say that spring training records mean not a thing.
Yeah.
However.
Yeah.
In the words of the great Stephen A. Smith, however, the Orioles offense is sick, and they're pitching. Now the starting rotation is buttressed up as well this year, but that offense, like, there are some games in spring training, I don't know if you followed, where as soon as the other team gets to a bullpen, the Orioles just destroy it.
Wow.
Like, just destroy it. And it's like, wow.
Yeah. I think you said it perfect. I mean, most of what you're seeing in spring training, you're kind of ignoring. But, like, after what they did a year ago, and then they're doing that in spring training, I think, I think it's something you could read into a little bit, at least a little bit.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are always thrilled to have this guy on Mondays. He was not here last Monday because he was traveling, but he's here now to give us some Somo bombs. It's Mike Somich from The Handle here at the network. How you doing, Mike?
Doing well, boys. It was a fun weekend in Vegas. I love being in Vegas for March Madness. That opening weekend is always a blast. The energy there in the sportsbook, phenomenal. You get just these random cheers for every basket, which I absolutely love. And then you have so many opportunities to be able to bet on these games. I do think it's one of the hardest times to bet on college basketball during the tournament, just because these are much sharper lines than what we'll see when there's 144 games out there on a Tuesday or on a Saturday. But at the same time, it's just so much fun to be able to get in there, get the action. And I thought we learned a lot this weekend.
Mike, by the way, comes to us courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. Give me your biggest takeaways from the weekend, or the 4 days anyway.
Look, UConn's a truck. I think we all knew that coming into this, so that's not a huge takeaway. I was really impressed with the ACC, and not just the bottom tiers where we saw, you know, Clemson, we saw NC State be able to get in, but the top two teams. I thought North Carolina really looked good taking on Michigan State. They faced some adversity. They were down 10 early. They were able to claw their way out of that and really dominate the second half and take care of a, you know, not overly talented Michigan State, but a tough, disciplined Michigan State team. And then you look at Duke. I didn't love the matchup for them in the second round. James Madison allowing just 30% shooting from three against their opponents this year, a very tough physical defense, something Duke has struggled with during the regular season. They just came out and blew the doors off them. Now, they did have some excellent three-point shooting, so you got a little variance concern there, but I thought Duke and North Carolina both looked phenomenal this weekend.
Yeah, you know, we were starting at the top saying, you know, look, 10 of the 12 top three seeds have advanced to the Sweet 16, 12 of the 16 top fours have advanced. And so on the one hand, the committee can kind of be like, hey, see, look, our seeding wasn't so bad. On the other, what you're bringing up is interesting. The ACC obviously doing spectacularly with four teams in the Sweet 16. All three Big East teams have advanced. So, I mean, does it, on the other hand, with the committee and the seeding, doesn't it make, if you're St. John's and if you're Pitt, like, aren't those teams like, see, like, we absolutely should have been in this?
Yeah, I feel like the Big East has a pretty good case to make that they should have gotten more than three teams here. Seton Hall, St. John's, Pittsburgh, probably all should have at least been in higher consideration. I'm not sure if you can get all three of them in, but it feels like having three teams from what was inarguably probably the second best, maybe third best conference in basketball. When you see nine teams from the Big 12, they've struggled. The SEC, we've seen them struggle in this tournament. Feels a little lopsided there. I would expect that we're going to see more Big East teams in next year. And on top of that, I mean, the number one overall seed came from the Big East, right? It just, you had this, the top heavy conference. I realize the bottom, the dregs, the Big East, not nearly as good, but some of those middle teams really should have been into this dance.
All right, let's start with one half of these Sweet 16 games. And I want to get your thoughts on each of these. And we'll start with the Thursday games, and we'll begin with the 2-point spread between Iowa State and Illinois with the Cyclones favorite. Now it's 1.5, by the way, this just in, down to 1.5 in favor of the Cyclones. We had a vote for Illinois earlier from Matty Cox, a three-man weep. Where do you come down on this?
I haven't figured this game out yet. Illinois is one of those teams where I want to fade them at some point. Their offense looks phenomenal, and they had a very favorable matchups in both the first round and second round. So you expected it to look very good. Like, the drawing Duquesne in the second round, I thought was very good for them. They could have lost that second round game. I believe it was BYU who Duquesne beat. If they had been BYU, I think that would have been a more difficult matchup for Illinois. This Iowa State team is a tough matchup for Illinois, but I need to dive in and see a little bit more on the defensive efficiency side on Iowa State if I'm ready to lay the points here. Illinois, they can score at will, but they are 152nd in adjusted defensive rate. At some point, that is going to come back to bite them, because if the shots stop falling, they're not going to be able to get stops on the other end when you get into these better teams. So to me, Illinois is a fade. I'm not sure if now is the round or if it's going to be the next round we'll be going against them. But to me, I'm not into Illinois long term. I was surprised so many people were excited with them coming out of this first round, because, look, they just got perfect matchups. They were able to overpower Morehead State in the first round and just overpower Duquesne with offense in the second round. Neither of those teams could really put up a fight on the defensive side. As soon as you see someone who can put up a fight on the defensive side and Illinois can't score at will, I have big time concerns about how they're going to be able to stop anyone.
Yeah, that's the last tip-off on Thursday. That's in the East Regional between the 2 and 3 seeds. The first tip-off is out west, Arizona and Clemson. Arizona now down to a 6.5-point favorite from 7 earlier on the show.
Yeah, I took a little bit of Clemson here at 7. I like the way that Clemson's been playing. This is a team that's tough. We talked about how good the ACC has been doing. This is an Arizona team where they have been consistent at times, but over the last 9 games, there have been 2 games where they scored under 70 points. Those are only 2 times that they've scored under 70 the entire season. So you do have some of those offensive questions. I think Arizona gets through here, but I just thought 7 was too much for Clemson.
All right, UConn is a 10.5-point favorite over San Diego State in the East Regional. 1-5 game. Is that right, 10.5?
I've given up betting on San Diego State. I just get them wrong come tournament time, and I am willing to just wave the white flag at this point. I would lean toward playing it with UConn. Like I said, UConn feels like an absolute truck again this year. We saw last year them just obliterate opponents on their way to the Final Four, and they've done that through 2 rounds so far. Now, the opponents they got made sense that they were able to obliterate them. I thought Northwestern may be able to keep it a little closer, but UConn just looked phenomenal in that first half and then struggled shooting a little bit in the second half, but still able to easily cover the number. This is a UConn team where I expect them to be able to score against San Diego State. And the issue with San Diego State is, where is that offense going to come from? Now, they shot the lights out yesterday. They looked, in the first half, it looked like there was just a bunch of Steph Currys out there shooting threes, and they were able to pour in 45 plus points in the first half. I don't see that happening against UConn here. It feels to me like if UConn's defense is able to slow down San Diego State at all, you're going to see UConn be able to cover this number. But like I said, I'm throwing my hands up on San Diego State. I'm not trying to figure out when they're going to show up, when they're not going to show up anymore. This is a team that I just can't get right.
San Diego State, the lone remaining Mountain West team, and the one team that's always trying to leave the Mountain West, by the way. Huskies 11-point favorites now. By the way, do you agree with the sentiment that as good as you knew UConn was, they've separated themselves even more after these first 2 rounds?
I wouldn't say they've separated themselves more, because I think that North Carolina and Purdue have both looked phenomenal through the first 2 rounds. There were some questions coming in with Purdue, how they would handle going out in the first round the last couple of years. And when you watch them play, and specifically yesterday, and you've got Edie on the inside, and I realize, you know, Utah State, they struggle covering the 2 points, and they're the 2-point shot, and they struggle against big men. But the 3-point shooting from Purdue and what they're able to do playing inside out, if you double Edie, what happens on the outside is completely different than what we saw last year. There's people that can go out and knock down shots. So I feel like 3 of the 4 one seeds have looked phenomenal in the first 2 days and answered some questions that I had coming into it. So, yeah, I think UConn, clearly the best team in the country. I wouldn't say they separated themselves, though, because I think a couple other teams played themselves up as well.
Only game that we haven't talked about on Thursday is Alabama and Carolina, with the Heels favored by 4. I have a future play on Bama that I feel like has no chance of getting to the promised land, but it is 60-1. Can Bama pull off the upset here? Let's start there.
I think this is a rough matchup for Alabama. I really do. To me, this is the exact type of team you don't want to play. It's a North Carolina team that, and then I've got North Carolina 18-1 to win it all. So I'm a little biased in this case, but it's a North Carolina team that really can put the ball in the net. They can be very effective on the offensive side, and Alabama can struggle defensively. And when North Carolina wants to ramp up the defensive efficiency, when they want to ramp up that defensive intensity, they have been able to bring it. And I think that's what we saw once they got down against Michigan State, is they said, wait a second, guys, we need to be better on the defensive end and we need to create run out points. And that's exactly what they were able to do. I think they're going to have success defensively against Alabama, and I'm not sure how Alabama stops them. So I already laid the 4 here with North Carolina.
Already laid it. Okay. Those are the 2 games in the East and the 2 games in the West. Those 2 regions play each other in the Final 4. We'll get to the Midwest and the South on the other side. Gonzaga, Purdue, Creighton, Tennessee, NC State, Marquette, Duke, Houston, and Mike has a couple hockey plays. Look at us. A couple hockey segments today on this Monday morning.
NHL bets for you.
And a what?
It's an NHL. Oh, NHL.
You have an NBA bet, right?
I do.
I'll repeat my tennis bets as well. The 2 that remain. The 2 that are left, I should say, since 1 was a walkover. That's on the other side. Numbers Game, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Kelly, mark it down. No one has said score the basketball on today's show. It's a good thing. There's never been a better time to have skin in the game with DraftKings Sportsbook, because right now we have a VSiN exclusive offer for new DraftKings customers. Earn a $500 bonus bet for every $1,000 you wager. You can earn up to $2,500 worth of bonus bets in your first 3 days on DraftKings. Don't wait. Download the app now. Use code ANG when you sign up and earn, listen to this, a $500 bonus bet for every $1,000 you wager now. Good deal from DraftKings. It's Gil Alexander. It's Kelly Bidlin live from Bar Canada here at the D. We get tweets at Beating the Book. This is from John Balducci. Classic when Kenny kept busting on Barkley by yelling classic little John mantra, Yale. Did you hear that? Because Yale beat Auburn.
That's great.
Barkley had thrown out the cigar at halftime. It was great. Ernie would say, who beat Auburn? And Kenny would go, Yale.
That's actually pretty good. Yeah, I didn't see that.
Let's see this. This is from St. Louis to St. Louis to OC to LV. He went from St. Louis to Orange County to LV.
Sure.
Sorry, my friend, but not including sick burn Caitlin in your commercial poll is borderline malpractice.
That's the like the little girl who's like talking trash, right?
Yeah, that didn't register for me the same way. Larry Fresh.
It's not a great commercial, but it's not annoying to me.
I ran downstairs three floors to get in that tennis play for a walkover. Emoji slapping his head.
At like 6:52 a.m. on Fremont Street, he ran down to Circle.
Sorry,
Larry.
And Jason H11 does say, he goes, it is true. That is what Raftery is always announcing. The first defense being played, and it's usually man-to-man. So he's like, man-to-man. He does that. He's so excited. Tom F. Oh, there's a shout out for Samich. Had 10 plus NCAA bets yesterday, passing chips back and forth the table. Suddenly, my account has a very nice bump. Turns out both horses, Samo Bomb, gave out one and made the day, dropping bombs Boom! With a Samo Bomb.
Samo Bomb.
There you go. And Sheldon Suffren. The Leafs always play Lucy in the football in the first round. They do. Haven't won a Stanley Cup since 1967. Oh, and one more. We get tweets. We get texts. Chris Velika adding to our most ridiculous, amusing announcer comments. He goes, Lapp has had a good one, too, in Creighton, Oregon. He said there was like 18 seconds left, and he blurts out, they can take the last shot here. Lapis was unbelievable. Lapis was very clear who he was rooting for in a lot of those games. Mike Samich, ladies and gentlemen, co-host of The Handle with our dear friend Matt Brown here weekends at the network. VSIN joins us once again, courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. You have a couple hockey plays.
I do. We got two big games in the NHL tonight. If you're a Vegas Golden Knights fan out there in Las Vegas, all eyes should be on this game against the St. Louis Blues tonight. St. Louis right now, the 9 seed in the Western Conference. The Las Vegas Golden Knights hold that last playoff spot in the 8 seed. Right now, St. Louis is a 5% chance to make the playoffs. Las Vegas, on the other hand, is a 92% chance. However, tonight's game could be key here. St. Louis could pick up 2 points on Las Vegas with just 10 to play. So we'll see how this one plays out. But when we have these type of games, to me, I love the first period under. So we're going to the first period under in this spot. You got Las Vegas, who is one of the lowest defensive teams giving up goals in the first period. So they really, really make it hard for you to be able to score in the first period. St. Louis on the other side, not that explosive an offense. They're going to have Binnington in that tonight. He is very good in that spot. I like the first period under here. So it's under a goal and a half. And this one, I believe, is plus 105 in this spot. So we'll go first period under Blues Golden Knights. But this should be a phenomenal hockey game that the Blues and the Knights both very much need.
All right. Under goal and a half, you said, first period for that one. What about your other play?
We're going to back to the well with the under 1.5 here. We've got the Kings taking on the Canucks. These are two teams, again, both in playoff contention here. The Kings are currently third in their division. The Canucks at the top. The Kings need every point they can get. They're trying to get home ice in that first round series. It's another game I expect to be a very tight checking game. Both of these teams play very good defensive hockey, very good stylistically to be able to trap the puck in the neutral zone, not allow rushes up and down the ice. That's going to play toward the under here. We're going right back to that first period under a goal and a half. So we're going first period under 1.5 goals, Kings Canucks minus 110, and first period under 1.5 goals, Golden Knights Blues plus 105 tonight. I think we're going to get some slow starts here in playoff style hockey.
All right, both the NBA and the NHL, about 10 to 12 games roughly from the end of the regular season. Your NBA play, Kelly, real quick?
Yeah, I laid it with the Kings tonight. I laid 9 with Philly coming into town. Philly picking up a big win last night, back-to-back 3-4 situation for them, though. This Sixers offense has been pretty disgusting without Joel Embiid in there. The Sacramento rolling right now after a bad loss against the Wizards a couple games ago, though. I think it's a tough spot for Philly tonight.
All right. And on tennis, I'm on Yulia Putintseva this morning, going up against Angelina Kalinina. Putintseva is the play on the ladies' side that remains or that is left. And Sebastian Korda as a dog, about a plus one. I got Sebastian at plus 148. You can probably get him for a couple pennies better. Sebastian Korda going up against Hubert Urquaz down there in Miami. Back to the Sweet 16, Mike. Let's go to Friday night. Couple Midwest regional games. The 1-5, Purdue and Gonzaga with the Boilermakers favored by 5 now. Your thoughts here?
This is probably the game I'm most excited to watch. I want to see how Purdue handles this Gonzaga offense and what they're able to do and what Few is going to do on the defensive end to be able to try and defend Edie and the plethora of three-point shooters that Purdue now has on the outside. I haven't touched this game yet. I'm excited to watch it. I would slightly lean toward Gonzaga. I'd love to be able to get in that 6-7 range to get a bet in. So no bets for me yet. Excited to watch the game. Gonzaga lean, but I can't get to the window right now at 5. I think that's the correct number.
All right, besides Illinois and Iowa State, this is the shortest spread. This is also in the Midwest. 2-3 game. Tennessee, the Vols are 3-point favorites against Creighton.
I've been waiting for this game since the tournament started. I laid it with the Vols already. Wow. This Creighton team, I've talked about how they don't shoot the ball well on the road. They don't shoot the ball well on neutral courts. We saw that. Last game out against Oregon, they really struggled to shoot the 3-point ball, specifically later in that game. I don't think that they're going to be able to shoot the 3-ball well against Tennessee. I think Tennessee's defense is going to cause a lot of problems for Creighton. And offensively, I trust Dalton Connect to be able to find enough offense to get Tennessee through here. I was happy to lay the 3 with the Vols here. I have the Vols to go to the Final Four. I've got a bunch of plus money tickets on them there too. So this is going to be a big game for me because I do have quite a bit of Tennessee interest here.
Here are Rick Barnes' last NCAA tournament exits. Sweet 16, round of 32, round of 64, Sweet 16, round of 32. Those are all with Tennessee. With Texas still going back in time. Round of 64, round of 32, round of 64, round of 32, round of 64, round of 32. You have to go all the way back to 2007, 2008 with Texas for him to have gotten back to the Elite Eight. So this, Mike says, is that time that he will get back there. Okay, final two games. We go to the South region on Friday. Final two games that we haven't gotten to, not necessarily chronological order on Friday. NC State and Marquette, the one double-digit seed that's alive. NC State, the Wolfpack, on a 7-0 heater here in the postseason. 5 games, 5 wins in 5 days in the ACC tournament to win that conference tourney, and now 2 to start the big dance. Marquette, though, a 6.5-point favorite.
This line looks right about where it should be to me. Look, this NC State team, the run's been phenomenal. What they were able to do in the ACC tournament specifically against North Carolina, against Duke, where they looked like the better team in both those games, really makes you respect what the top end of this team can be. But Marquette getting healthy at the right time. We saw their star come back, Big East Player of the Year last year, come back, be healthy. We had concerns that he wasn't going to be able to come back and be fully healthy for this game. You now get an extra week for him to be ready. This Marquette offense is a truck. I would lean toward the over 150 here. I think both these teams have success on the offensive end, but I'm not going to touch the side in this one.
Over 150. By the way, in terms of totals in the Sweet 16, no surprise that Bama and Carolina is the highest at 173. Also no surprise that any game involving San Diego State would be the lowest, 138.5 against UConn. Pardon me. No, this is the lowest one. Pardon me. Duke and Houston, 134. It is a bit lower, with Houston favored by 4.
Yeah, this feels like it could be a rock fight. I actually already took the 4 points here with Duke. I like this Duke team quite a bit. I have them making the Final Four. I've got them plus 550 to make the Final Four. I have the Final Four in my bracket. I had them taking on Houston, and I think they're going to get by Houston here. So I like Duke on the money line, and I already took the plus 4 here. This is just a good matchup for Duke. We saw McCain come out and play like we expected him to be able to play when he went to Duke. He finally broke through that ceiling there. This is a well-rounded Duke team that is playing right at the right time. Again, we talked about this last year, how Shire had this team going heading into the NCAA tournament and playing well. It looks like we're in that same trajectory here. And you watch Houston against A&M, there were just some question marks that popped their head toward the end of that game where you're like, what are we doing, guys? We have a double digit lead. Why can't we get this across the line? And then they have to go to overtime. They end up taking care of business there. But I think there are chinks in the armor here for Houston, and I think Duke's able to expose them. So I took Duke plus the 4, and I like them on the money line as well.
John Shire, Kelly, trying to make leaflet history, if you know what I mean. All right, so the bets that you have in pocket Sweet 16 are, to recap?
Duke plus 4, Tennessee minus 3. What was the, I have one other one, I can't remember it.
Illinois, Iowa State, did you play anything?
I haven't played that one yet. I'm leaning toward Iowa State to lay it, but I have not actually laid it there.
Okay, all right. Mike Somich, everybody, co-host of The Handle. Weekends here at the network. Mike, always great to see you, and congratulations on the Big Horse weekend, man.
Thank you very much. It was a good day at the track. Hope we can keep it rolling.
At SomoBomb18, we've done all we can do. Gojo and Golic are next. Enjoy from Visa, the Sports Betting Network.